And a pleasant good evening from the El Pacifico, the world-famous Phil Henry Show here in our loft studio. Truth is our bitch. We go around the world and around the nation and around to bring you the latest on what am going on. This is Phil Henry, and we're online at philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. And we are also on your radio. So if you go to our website and you look up the affiliate list there, you'll find an affiliate near you. We have a lot of people asking, well, where are you? Where can I hear you on the radio? And you can find us on that affiliate list where we is on the radio. But you can, for sure, you can find us online at philhenryshow.com, philhenryshow.com. Just got done with another rehearsal of our one-man show this afternoon. And I spent this past weekend in Pasadena, California, which is my hometown, my home digs, the hood, where I attended a function and where I, for the first time in several weeks, engaged in the eating of sugar, which automatically gave me sleep paralysis. Now, I know that you look at me, Margaret, as if I've lost my mind, and Bud, you look at me like I've just evolved from a seed pod. Robert, you seem to not care. You're looking as if you're cleaning your fingernails. Is that what you're doing?
What?
You're cleaning your fingernails?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Well, what do you mean by sleep paralysis? Tell people what is meant by sleep paralysis, please. Because I don't think they know.
I've told the story a million times. Sleep paralysis is a state in which you are awakening. And you are in this, I just learned this word the other day, you're in the hypnagogic state being that state between sleeping and awakening. I know it sounds like a made-up word. It is a made-up word. All words are made up. But this is an actual valid word that's used in the fields of...
Hypnagogia.
Yes, hypnagogia. Thank you, Bud.
What is hypnagogia?
I don't even know if hypnagogia exists. But it's used in the psycho... It's used in the psych ward, and it's a state where you believe that you're awake, and in point of fact, you are sort of awake, but you're still dreaming. I can't describe it. But you are awake. You're awake enough to know that your body, you can't move your body. Your body is paralyzed, and it's one of the most frightening states of mind-body to be in, because you can't move, and you spend an inordinate amount of energy trying to move your body, and you finally do. You finally start getting your arm going, and then your the rest of your body going, and you finally, once you're able to move, then you also wake up. And that happened to me this past weekend for the first time in a long time, and I think it's because I was eating some crap, because when I got on the diet, man, all that stuff went away.
You're talking about having a diet. What?
The diet that I went on caused me to eat good food, and the good food didn't make me have weird things happen to me. That's all I can tell you, you know. As all of the great nutritionists will tell you, eating the good food will make all the weird stuff not happen to you.
Exactly.
Right. So that happened this past weekend, among other things. Then I had some flaky dream last night that caused me to wake up and just want to commit suicide. So it was a fantastic weekend.
What do you think happened, man? You're having all these bad dreams.
I think what happened was it's just a crap weekend. I don't know. Stuff started out good, and then it just slowly went downhill. I don't know what it was. I don't know what it was, man. But I do know that we've got a show in store for you tonight that ought to be all kinds of fun. And we also would like to remind you our podcast is out, episode 122. This is a podcast that was recorded live at the Beverly Hills Museum of Television and Radio, and it features Ted Bell, and that's who's going to be on our program this evening as well as a special guest, Ted Bell. And I think you'll like that. That is episode 122 of the Phil Henry Show podcast, available now on iTunes, and it's free. And, of course, at philhenryshow.com with a backstage pass, you can watch our live streaming video of the show, which is happening right now. Now, this is something, Margaret, you found this, right?
Yes, this is from Business Insider. I think people are going to find this to be a real eye-opener. This is amazing.
What is it?
The National Football League, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Doesn't pay taxes.
The National Football League.
The National Football League pays no taxes. Tax exempt. Now, it's a temptation to ask you men, how do you feel about that? But I have a hunch that even the most conservative of you will feel it's okay.
I have a hunch you're wrong.
No, I'm right.
No, I have a hunch you're wrong. If what you say is true, the National Football League pays no taxes, then I have a hunch that even the most conservative football fan will say, that's no good. They must. Now, let me see this story. This is the Business Insider. The NFL is still technically a nonprofit organization. You may not know it, but the National Football League is a nonprofit organization. It may seem absurd that a collection of teams that generated at least $9 billion in revenue in 2011 would be given tax-exempt status, but the NFL is technically classified as a 501c6 organization. Here's how the IRS describes 501, parentheses C, numeral 6, tax-exempt status. Section 501, parentheses C, parentheses 6, of the Internal Revenue Code provides for the exemption of business leagues, chambers of commerce, real estate boards, boards of trade, and professional football leagues, which are not organized for profit, and no part of the net earnings of which inures to the benefit of any private shareholder or individual. That's right there that bothers me.
Wait, just read on, Phil.
Well, no, I mean, I'm just right there. I'm wondering how they're defining things. It's obviously notable that only professional football leagues are included here as opposed to all sporting leagues, because we were quoting there from the IRS tax code, and they only mentioned professional football leagues. The exemption for football stems from lobbying efforts by Pete Rozelle in the 1960s to earn an antitrust exemption for the merger of the NFL and the AFL. The antitrust and tax exemptions were cleverly attached to an uncontroversial 1966 bill to suspend the investment credit and the allowance of accelerated depreciation in the case of certain real property. Does anybody know how to interpret that phrase? The answer to that question is nine.
Well, there's got to be a business...
Probably some real estate guy.
I was going to say some business attorney.
Well, yeah, but I mean, does the average person know how to interpret that? No. The NFL-AFL merger language, the NFL-AFL merger language, was included at the end of the bill that had nothing else to do with football. Here is the meat of the IRS explanation of how these tax-exempt leagues are supposed to work. A business league is an association of persons having some common business interest, the purpose of which is to promote such common interest and not to engage in a regular business of a kind ordinarily carried on for profit. Trade associations and professional associations are business leagues. To be exempt, a business league's activities must be devoted to improving business conditions of one or more lines of business as distinguished from performing particular services for individual persons. No part of a business league's net earnings may inure to the benefit of any private shareholder or individual, and may not be organized for profit to engage in an activity ordinarily carried on for profit, even if the business is operated on a cooperative basis or produces only enough income to be self-sustaining. The term line of business generally refers either to an entire industry or to all components of an industry within a geographic area. It does not include a group composed of businesses that market a particular brand within an industry. I read that really fast because even if I read it slow, and...
Even if you read it slow, it'd mean what?
Even if I read it slow, nobody would understand. It seems inconceivable that the NFL is not engaging in a regular business of a kind ordinarily carried on for profit, but how are their efforts to maximize profits any different from those of Major League Baseball, the National Basketball Association, or the NFL? As far as the NFL's net earnings, the profit was actually in the red in 2009, according to its latest available return. Virtually all of the league's $192.2 million in revenue in 2009 came from membership dues and assessment. See, the NFL is the business league. It's the Chamber of Commerce for the National Football League owners.
Well,
I think that in a lot of ways this article is true, but it's a little deceptive. They're talking about the NFL, not the owners, not the teams. They're talking about the league. They're talking about the association.
Yeah, but I mean, let's say they made $192 million.
Well, but yes, it was $192 million that was actually in the red because they had expenses.
Oh, well, you know, look, here is the truth. The teams get taxed. The owners of the teams get taxed. The corporations that own the teams get taxed. Don't even worry about it. There's payroll tax. There's corporate tax. The New York Giants, Inc., the Denver Broncos, Inc., and so on. They all pay corporate taxes, and I would guess they pay a fairly hefty sum. The National Football League, that organization that is the membership umbrella of all of these, it's kind of like saying, well, as they said, it's like the Chamber of Commerce. You can be Joe's Hardware Store, and then you can be a member of the Chamber of Commerce. To say that the Chamber of Commerce didn't pay taxes is not to say that Joe's Hardware Store didn't pay taxes. Now, the only thing that's kind of deceptive about this is that the NFL is not exactly that.
Oh, yes, it is, Phil.
No, it isn't.
Yes, you're thinking of some of the newer leagues that do have ownership stake in the teams. And there are newer leagues like that, newer football leagues. The NFL is not one of them.
Well,
what are you talking about? You're a lady. You don't know.
I'm a lady, but you're a man, and I know more about it than you do because you're an idiot.
Well, all right. That's all of that aside.
True.
All of that aside, I understand what you're saying. The NFL doesn't have an ownership. Although the NFL will take over, they will take over the operation of a team if it's financially not doing well. All right, let's take a break. We'll be back. Ted Bell's going to join us here, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
You talk about football?
We'll probably talk about football with Ted and other things, steaks, meat in your mouth, that kind of thing. We'll be right back. World-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Movies.
Yeah, I was thinking that we would have, I just saw Hell is for Heroes. They just had this on the military channel. I thought that'd be a great idea. Just something that is going to keep a male-driven clientele of the drive-rib room coming in for more for months to come. And of course, then we've got, the baseball season coming up and football.
You don't think that basketball and...
I don't think basketball drives the crowd there in the drive-rib room anywhere near as much as the football action does.
Did you hear what we were talking about here, Ted, concerning the NFL?
Yeah, I heard that. Let me tell you this. I think you get into a dangerous situation when you ask the fans to understand the complexities of tax law as it applies to their favorite sport, especially if it's professional. Now, I'm not saying the average fan can't understand it. I'm not saying that at all. But I am saying that it gets into an area that is so technical and is potentially so explosive that the emotional aspect to it, saying to a fan, you love football, but there is a tax law or a tax code that seems to expose your favorite sport or your favorite teams to very legitimate criticism vis-a-vis taxes and the amount they're paying. And I think that causes the average football fan or the average sports fan or what have you, I think that causes them to sort of take a step back and get a little confused.
Well, what do you mean by confused? I mean, you're saying that they don't have the ability to assess...
I'm saying that they do not have the ability to intelligently assess the situation because you're combining two areas, Bill, that are seemingly contradictory. One is the cold and meticulous analysis of money and law, and the other is the very white-hot world of emotion as it pertains to sports. And trying to get those two areas to marry or to those two areas to intersect and interlock, I think is difficult. And so I would rather, you know, I don't think it's a good idea to even bring this stuff up.
Well, I think you're talking a lot of talk that sounds like fancy talk for just don't bring it up to them because they don't get it. And
no, I think I already said to you, no, I didn't say that. I said that I think, you know, you're going to have a difficult time.
Ted, this is Margaret. When you say they're going to have a difficult time, isn't that your way of sort of injecting that thought? You don't know if people are not going to have an easy or difficult time. Look at the football fans in Los Angeles. They love football, but they're not building a stadium.
Well, shit, look at the football fans in Los Angeles. I mean, they love football, but they're not building a stadium. So what does that say?
Well, that says, well, I think what she's saying is that means that there's football, there are football fans here, but they're not so overblown and overwhelmed by the need and the love of football that they can't see clearly that they don't want to spend money on a stadium.
Think that there are football fans here. I think that's the difference. I think that L.A. has long since lost any passion that it had for sports. I think that L.A. has been overrun by a kind of... I think this town has become a sort of a hermitage or some sort of a safe harbor for all of these people that hate sports and that hate football in particular and hate the Super Bowl and hate having anything having to do with the with the celebration of sports because it's so violent, you know, and it's so this and that, and it's because it's politically incorrect. And I think you got a city here that is a safe haven for that, and I think it shows us for what we are, a city that's been overwhelmed and overrun by these touchy-feely types that couldn't find any other place to live.
And so this is, in other words, so these are people that have moved here, huh?
Absolutely. I think they're people that have moved. If you look at L.A., L.A. is by nature a football city. At one time, we had five professional football teams here in the 40s, back when they had minor league and major league, all that. So Los Angeles is very much a football city. But now it isn't because of all these soft, these touchy-feelies, and these new agers, and it makes me sick to my stomach.
We're talking to Ted Bell here from Ted's of Beverly Hills about the alleged tax situation. There's no real controversy here. The NFL doesn't pay taxes because it's not that the NFL doesn't pay taxes. It's that it is exempt from paying any real significant tax as an organization. But the teams pay.
Of course the teams pay. Of course the teams pay. But then again, that was something that was brought up by these touchy-feely types that hate professional sports and want to impugn and malign, particularly the NFL, in the eyes and the minds of people that love this sport. And I think it's a crying shame.
All right, Dean Wheeler's going to come on here in a moment and engage you, Ted, in a debate on this topic. Ted Bell is with us from Ted's of Beverly Hills. Dean, of course, is the owner of the Northern California Holistic Center. And Dean is going to take the side of you know, he's going to take the contrary side, if you will.
Not to interrupt, but he comes from Northern California, right?
Yeah.
So he comes from that area of the state where they've had traditionally great football teams. Down south, here in Los Angeles, we don't have football, professional football, any more than we've got any real shot at winning a World Series. You know, we haven't had professional football here in years, as you know. And you got a guy from a Northern California Holistic Center who's going to start talking all kinds of stuff about how he loves, about how he thinks the NFL. Forget it.
Right. That's what I was hoping.
Well, I don't want to go into it, but I just think it's, you know, some guys have really got it so good that they just decide to play it any way they want.
Well, you know, you can't blame the man for coming from Northern California.
Yes, I can. Oh, yes, I can.
All right. Well, we're going to talk to Dean and find out why he feels as he feels, that the NFL not paying taxes is wrong, and a whole lot of other stuff. It may be very predictable, and I'm sure that he's got his... he may need his facts straightened out a little bit. Ted Bell has joined us as well, and we'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL and philhendryshow.com.
Whether you want to come in for a cool drink, whether you want to go in for one of the greatest steaks you're ever going to have, whether you want to just come in and put your feet up, we'd rather that you, well, we'd rather you buy something. I'm not saying to think it.
Well, I'm sure people understand.
Although, I want to be very clear, though. We'd rather you not come in and just, you know, it's very difficult. I guess I'll pass on explaining.
I don't think you need to explain.
Well, we've had people come in, especially, again, I have this problem. No, you know, I'd rather not.
You got a problem with my listeners?
No, I didn't say your listeners, did I?
That's who you're referring to.
I'm referring to people that have come into my restaurant, that have heard about my restaurant on your radio show, and they have sat down and they look around as if they are touring something or as if they're on a Disney ride and they don't buy anything. Yes. So if that's your listeners, then yes.
I think if they heard about your show on my...
My show on your restaurant? Wow.
No, your restaurant.
Yeah, okay. Nice going there. Way to, you know, nice going, Dr. Leary. I think you,
What does that Dr. Leary crack mean?
I think you've got some brain cells that are scrambled, don't you?
Well, not for the reasons he might.
I understand that. I'm just saying, your restaurant or your show?
My show, they heard about your restaurant on.
That's right.
Okay, and you're intimating there for that people are coming into your... Never mind, folks. If you go into Ted's of Beverly Hills, please buy something.
Well, I want to follow that up. Please buy a meal. Don't buy a... If you say that to them, they're going to sit there and buy a breadstick or something. I don't know what they're going to do.
How can you buy a breadstick?
You can sit down and... You know what I'm talking about.
I understand what you're talking about. If they go into your bar, do you have a minimum?
All I'm saying is, Phil, I want people to come in and enjoy themselves. Ted's of Beverly Hills is a great restaurant. I don't think I should have to say, please come in and actually buy something. And only... God darn it.
All right, let me get Dean Wheeler in here.
Well, I want to finish the point that I'm making.
Hold on, let me get... Because Dean's been hanging on. Dean...
Yeah, hi, Phil. I want to just mention something to Ted. It's Dean Wheeler. Ted, how are you doing?
I'm fine.
Let me just say this. I think that anybody listening to the broadcast should go into Ted's of Beverly Hills, and it just doesn't pay unless you sit down and have a steak. If you don't, then you can certainly sit out on the street, on a curb, drinking from a refrigerated bottle of wine. A refrigerated bottle of wine, I think, is nice.
All right, so in other words, they're winos.
Why is it that when Dean comes on here and tries to help me...
But a minute ago, you didn't want him talking.
It wasn't that he didn't want me talking. He wanted to finish his point. But I think what I'm saying is, Phil, when it comes to your listeners, and this is no criticism.
I think it is a criticism when you say that my listeners are going to sit on a curb and drink a refrigerated bottle of wine.
No, that is not a criticism. That's a relatable, Dean.
Yes, it's a relatable statement.
A relatable statement.
A relatable statement. Okay, so here's something that you guys listening to the Phil Hendry Show can relate to. If you go into Ted's of Beverly Hills and you cannot afford a steak...
Phil, if it's so relatable, why do you have to say to them, here's a relatable statement?
Yeah, no kidding. This is why I get into this with you, Phil. You're always stating the obvious when you don't need to.
No, I'm going to finish what I'm going to say. So you guys listening to the show right now, here's something that you'll probably understand... Get yourself a refrigerated bottle of wine and sit on a curb and enjoy it. There. Is that good enough?
Well, I don't think I put it that way, Phil. I think I said you can enjoy a refrigerated bottle of wine sitting. He said sitting on a curb. He didn't say sitting on a curb. And I think there's a real difference, Phil, and it's a subtle difference, but it's one that you don't often grasp. I'm just trying to avoid a fight here. I don't.
All right, let's get into what it was that we wanted to talk about then.
Why are you upset?
Oh, I'm not upset. I think I'm not upset. I think that it's an interesting statement.
No, hold on for a minute. Do you hear him? He goes, I'm not upset. You know, let the record show that's what you did.
All right, okay, so my voice cracked, but I'm not upset. I just think it's a very interesting statement, and I think it is slightly insulting to say to my audience that they have to drink a refrigerated bottle of wine.
But you're not upset, but it is insulting.
Were you intending to insult me?
No, I was not.
I'm not really upset. I think I'm disappointed. There's a good word.
Why are you disappointed? All right, this ought to be good. Watch this, folks. Why are you disappointed, Phil?
You know, Ted, because you've got Dean now weighing in on your side, you're feeling all powerful and everything, and you're going to have some fun. Is that it?
No. I'm asking the audience. I'm asking you, and I'm telling the audience, watch this. Let's have some fun. Why are you disappointed?
Okay, so in other words, you're going to have some fun, and you're asking the audience to watch this, but you're not trying to have a moment here in the sun. You're not trying to have a Ted moment.
I don't even know what you're talking about, but why are you disappointed?
I'm disappointed that you guys would take that route, that you would say the listeners of the Phil Hendry Show will understand when we say grab yourself a refrigerated bottle of wine and sit on a curb. Okay, I'm disappointed because I think you guys could find a better way of addressing my audience. I'm disappointed because I think you could find a better way of talking to them without insulting them. I'm disappointed.
Go ahead. Phil, how do you figure we're insulting them? If we say that to your audience and they say, that's a really good idea, Mr. Wheeler, thank you, and they don't know any better.
Well, there you go. They don't know any better. Okay, and I happen to know that many of them do because I happen to know members of my audience. I know a lot of them. And I know they know what a refrigerated bottle of wine represents, which is a cheap bottle of wine, and sitting on a curb represents having nowhere else to go. In other words, homeless, or perhaps alcoholic. Perhaps that curb is in Skid Row.
Perhaps. But see, what you want to do is you want to go down that road. You want to skip down the road of disappointment until you reach the dead end of DTs and 100, you know, straight Applejack, 100 proof. That's what you want to do. And
no, I don't. In other words, they're all alcoholics?
I think that what Ted is saying is valid, Phil. You want, as Ted said, you want to tra-la-la down the alley of further diminishing returns until you reach the gurney of detox. And exactly. And you want your audience to be strapped to that gurney. You simply want to be one of the attendants. You don't want to be strapped to it with them.
Does anybody know what it is we're talking about here? Monday night, straight out of the chute, if you'll pardon the expression, and I said shoot, not.
You sure you don't mean another vowel?
No, I don't mean a different vowel. And here we are talking about people. Okay, let's forget all about it. Let's get back to what it was we were going to talk about, which is the National Football League, the expectations of fans, the taxability, the tax liability, the NFL, as we just said, Dean. Is not the football teams themselves. The NFL is the umbrella organization. It's like a trade association.
Oh, yeah, right.
Well, I mean, so you deny that.
Dean, you know, we were doing very good. You're not going to start to get me angry, are you? No, I'm not going to get you angry. I just simply, when you say that the NFL is nothing more than a trade association, that is, I think that's not speaking the truth fully.
Well, the NFL, come on. Are you trying to tell me the National Football League is something more than that? The member teams, all right, that's what makes up the NFL.
All right, well, let me say something on behalf of Mr. Hendry. Didn't you get all of that from Phil?
That's true.
Did I what?
Didn't you get all of what you just said from Phil? You didn't really know how to present your case until you heard Phil.
No.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
No, that's not exactly right.
That's exactly right. When I started talking about it, that's when you said, oh, yeah.
No, what do you mean, oh, yeah? You don't even know what I was thinking. You don't know where I was. It was during a commercial break.
You were sitting there on the phone waiting for us to come back from the commercial.
Where was I?
I'll take a guess on that.
Go ahead.
The bathroom.
So, all right, so that's logical.
What was I doing?
Never mind what you were doing. You got your argument. I'll debate you, Dean. And the fact is that the National Football League is the umbrella organization, is the trade association. It is not the money-making engine of the NFL.
And you're pretty sure of that?
I'm absolutely sure. It's not the money-making engine of those teams. The teams are the ones that make the money. And they are not a non-taxable entity because they're simply a trade association, a league, a professional football league. Why would a professional football league be exempt?
I'm sorry, Phil, say that again.
Why would this professional football league be exempt? I think Pete Rozelle and the owners of the NFL and the AFL said, hey, why are we treated any differently?
Well, here's a question. If the NFL is treated that way, what about Major League Baseball? Just like he said, what about the hockey? What about the hockey? What about the hockey? Why doesn't the hockey get the same tax-exempt status?
I don't know. Maybe they ought to apply. Maybe they ought to, find their way over to a meeting of the whoever the hell makes these laws, like the United States Congress, and apply for that kind of status. The NFL did. And they have so ruled, and I would say that the National Hockey League or the Major League Baseball or the NBA, they might try applying some of the same pressure and some of the same arguments.
Well, I don't think they do it because they know they get shot down. And if they get shot down, the NFL is up for grabs, too. I think the National Football League will be looked at anew. And I don't think it'll be very pleasant. Wheeler, I was listening to what you were saying, and I don't like what you're saying. In fact, I don't even like you. I do appreciate you getting my back at the beginning of this. I think that when we're talking about businesses, and we're talking about very lucrative businesses like the National Football League, I think they must be tax-exempt from the standpoint of the trade association, the umbrella association, and so forth. When you talk about the NBA, I don't care. No one watches that. When you talk about the NHL, I don't care. No one watches that. And when you talk about Major League Baseball, no one can figure out how Major League Baseball is run. The NFL is the only organization that makes any sense that we give this tax-exempt status to. I don't know what he said.
What do you mean nobody cares?
No one cares about the NBA or the NHL. No one cares. No one. No fan of the NBA can even begin to understand tax law. No fan of the NHL it cares because they're all Canadians. Major League Baseball, no one's been able to figure out how that's run. That leaves the NFL.
Well, that's asinine, okay?
Well, it may be asinine. Go ahead and prove me wrong.
Nobody in the NBA can understand tax law.
None of the fans can. And the NHL is, hello, Canadian. Those people don't care about U.S. tax law. I don't know how they run things in Canada. And as far as Major League Baseball goes, I'll say it again, no one knows who runs Major League Baseball. No one knows how it's done. No one. Well, I don't. I can't. That's right. You can't. Well, I just...
No one knows how Major League Baseball is run.
Go ahead. You know? Do you know?
Hold on. Major League Baseball has a commissioner. Major League Baseball has a commissioner hired by the owners. It's one league. It's one league.
What is?
Major League Baseball. It is one league. Essentially, it's one league. It's not two leagues. It's one. It's just one organization.
One organization. Do they own the teams? Because if they own the teams, if Major League Baseball owns the teams, which I don't think they do, then they've got a big problem. But who knows? Who knows who owns what? See, that's what I'm saying. And so that's why I say the NFL is the only sports league in America that makes any sense at all, that anybody can figure out, that anyone knows anything, that anyone would even want to... To think of the other three makes me sick to my stomach. I can't figure it out. Yeah, thanks a lot, Dean.
All right, Dean, you have anything you want to say then?
No, I got confused. Yeah, see what I'm saying? You're good to jump in here and...
All right. We'll be right back, 877-876-PHIL, as we talk here with Dean Wheeler and Ted Bell about why the National Football League is essentially a tax-exempt organization. But folks, remember, we're not talking about the teams. We're not talking about the member teams. They're the ones that make the money. They're the ones that pay the corporate taxes. They're the ones that pay the payroll taxes. The NFL that we're talking about is that trade association name. That is the umbrella organization that these ball clubs belong to. We'll be right back. The world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. I was going to say that we have Ted Bell here with us, along with Dean Wheeler. But we also have...
Thanks a lot. You know, we want to get some bills paid here,
so... Ted, easy.
Sorry.
Steakhouse. Get to Beverly Hills Steakhouse. Come on down here and get a steak. Get something. Never mind. Henry.
What?
Well, you got to be reminded to play my commercial. Anyway, Hell is for Heroes this Sunday.
Ted, you gotta, don't... Don't tell me, just talk to me off the air.
Talk to you off the air? I just said Hell is for Heroes on Sunday. Come on down and watch it.
Great, but you were bellyaching that I didn't get to the commercial in time.
Well, you know, you do this.
All right, Ted's with us along with Dean Wheeler from the Northern California Holistic Society as we talk about football. And, Dean, do you like football?
I like football, yeah. I enjoy it. I enjoy watching it being played. And I always get that question because people will assume that I don't like football because I have an attitude that is one of sensitivity. And I haven't... My overall attitude or my presentation, some people think, is a metrosexual kind of attitude.
That was what struck me.
Well, Ted, if you can hold off for a minute, I'm talking to Phil. That I have a metrosexual attitude.
We're doing a give and take here.
Right. I mean, I just hold on.
Okay. I'll start again. If I said we, that would infer Ted, and I don't want him to get upset with me.
Inferring what?
Don't worry about it, Ted. He made a mistake. But the point being that a lot of people don't think that you are that much of a football fan, but indeed you are.
Oh, absolutely. I'm a very much a football fan. I am a 49er fan, first and foremost. But I also realized that we've spent an awful lot of money. We've spent an awful lot of money trying to make these people comfortable. And I just think the time has come for taxpayers, for individuals with families, individuals with businesses. I think the time has come for all of us to put our foot down and say, enough is enough. We no longer need to expend the amounts of money that we do on these ball clubs, whether they're football or basketball or baseball or any of them, and to pull back the dollars that we give to them and begin to invest, I think, more intelligently.
I see things differently, Phil, as you might well guess. I have a restaurant that I run, and on Sundays and Saturdays, a great deal of the traffic is directed into the prime rib room, which is our cocktail lounge to watch sports. And most of the time, it's football. This Sunday, we're going to be running a war movie, Hell is for Heroes, because I can't get anybody into my lounge when there's no football. Now,
And basketball and hockey doesn't do it.
Basketball and hockey doesn't do it, no.
I like hockey. I would go and see that.
That's wonderful, but there's not enough people like you, Dean. And, I knock wood, and I'm sorry to...
Okay, what does that mean?
Well, what it means is this. It doesn't mean anything. I didn't mean to offend you. I'm not here to offend you, but
When I said that I would watch hockey, and you said that there aren't enough people like me...
I was saying, regrettably, there are not enough people like you.
And then you said knock wood.
You did say knock wood.
You're thinking that.
Are you? What are you doing now, Henry? You trying to cause a fight?
No, I'm just saying, Mr. Henry was agreeing with me.
Mr. Henry was agreeing with you.
I heard you say knock wood.
I said knock wood because I was glad there's not more people like Mr. Wheeler. Because if there were, because if there were more people like Mr. Wheeler, there would be more intelligent people who would demand a higher quality of entertainment than Hell is for Heroes, and I'd be really in trouble. As it is, I can maybe get some business into my prime rib room showing a war movie, but that's it. And if people really see what it is I'm doing, which I think is a good thing that I'm doing, but Dean is a very
Well, it doesn't make any difference, Ted. I know that you're trying to insult me. And
I'm not trying to insult you. I'm saying that if there were more people like you...
Ted, you were trying to insult him. And now you're backpedaling and saying, no, I wasn't trying to insult him. And you're doing that because you got caught red-handed. The fact is, you were accusing Dean, or you were making an inference that Dean's some kind of a sissy.
No. I'm sorry, Phil. I'm sorry you can't get that one going. I'm sorry that you can't cause a homophobic riot out in the streets of L.A. tonight.
Well, is that what you meant?
Who am I speaking with?
Dean Wheeler. I'm Dean Wheeler.
What?
I'm Dean Wheeler.
I can't understand this.
Dean Wheeler, that's the guy you were talking to.
You're Dean Wheeler.
Yes.
Well, you suddenly became much less of a man than the one that I was talking to. Let me talk to the guy that was on the air with me.
I'm Dean Wheeler.
No, he's fading away. He's fading away, Phil.
Dean, are you there?
Yes.
Well, say it louder. Are you there, Dean?
Oh, you see, Henry, that is my point exact. Here's a guy that comes on here and is going to try to tell me the lay of the land about football, and the guy has faded away. Dean!
What?
See? He's almost gone.
Well, I don't know what happened to him. We'll have to get...
Yeah, you do that.
We'll have to get our technicians on it.
Yeah, you get your technicians. You need a sorcerer. You need a wizard.
Shores El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
And welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL, and online at philhenryshow.com. Margaret Gray, Bud Dickman, Robert Leonard with us. We also have on the line Vernon Dozier joining us from last week, mindful of the fact that Mr. Dozier almost had what sounded to us like some kind of an embolism or a stroke, was not doing well, but apparently he has... been given a clean bill of health to join us tonight for a discussion of the resignation of Pope Benedict the 16th. The announcement coming on Monday that he was stepping down because he was too elderly and infirm for the job, and he is the very first pope to resign in 598 years. That's a long, long time. We'll also be joined by Father James McQuarters as well. Yes, Margaret, go ahead.
And I'd like to remind Phil Henry radio listeners to get your backstage pass for philhenryshow.com. The one-man show is approaching rather rapidly. Phil, you had a rehearsal today?
Yes, I did.
And we'd like people to know that when tickets are available for the one-man show, we will make a limited number available through our website, philhenryshow.com.
But she's making an announcement.
Hold on, bud.
Because I'm making the announcement, that's why. Good enough for you?
Yeah.
So stay tuned to philhenryshow.com.
All right, thank you, Margaret. And Bud, you got a problem with any of that? I mean...
Yeah, let's you get to say it.
We'll have stuff for you to say, too, and Robert, you too. So just take it easy. All right, now, as you know, Pope Benedict XVI, and the reason why I know that, Bud, to answer your question, is because I know what X, V, and I means. The X and the V coming after the X means that's at 10 plus 5 and then 1. That makes what?
What?
10 plus 5 plus 1 makes what?
No, you shouldn't say the 10 plus 5 plus 1.
All right, 10 plus 5 makes what?
That makes 15.
Plus 1?
16.
Pope Benedict?
Pope Benedict? What's that?
That's what he is, the 16th.
That's what that means. That's V1. XV1, are you nuts?
No, I ain't nuts. Pope Benedict the 16th. No, it's about the Pope. It ain't about a rocket ship. XV1.
I thought it was.
Well, there was a rocket ship named the XV1, wasn't there?
There was an X... What the hell did they have, Robert?
They had like a X1. That was a rocket plane.
X1 was a rocket plane. All right, so that's not this.
No, that wouldn't be this. This would be a man, a human being, a guy by the name of,
Pope.
Pope Benedict, yeah.
I understand that, Phil. I'm simply asking, are we talking about the X, what is it?
X1 was a rocket plane, the X1. But that's not this, it's the Pope.
I know the difference between a rocket plane and a Pope, I think. although both in many ways possess the same abilities. Ha ha, I'm only kidding. But, you know, in a lot of ways I'm not.
Yeah, well, that's just great, Margaret. So we're talking about the Pope. We're not talking about the X1, X15, or whatever the hell else. I think it was the X15.
No, they had an X1, then they had an X15. What happened to X2?
I don't know. Never mind about the X2, man. We're talking about the Pope. How anybody could make that mistake, it's impossible. You're just being a jackass. All right, so Pope Benedict XVI's announcement on Monday that he was stepping down because he was too elderly and infirm for the job was the first papal resignation in 598 years. It put Benedict among the small handful out of 265 recognized popes in history who have stepped down as leaders of the Roman Catholic Church. The circumstances behind the other departures generally had nothing to do with age or health, according to Vatican history experts and references. Now, just to give you a little bit of the history of this, the last pope to resign was Pope Gregory XII. He did so in 1415, 10 years into his tenure, in the midst of a leadership crisis in the church known as the Great Western Schism. These rival popes had been three rival popes had been selected by separate factions of the church, and a group of bishops called the Council of Constance was trying to heal the schism. In an interview with Vatican Radio, Donald S. Pudlow, a papal historian at Jacksonville State University in Jacksonville, Alabama, said Gregory XII had offered to resign so that the council could choose a new pope whom all factions would recognize. It took 2 years after Gregory XII's departure to elect his successor, Malcolm X.
What?
I'm kidding. Martin V.
Said Malcolm X to be racist.
No, I didn't, because it said, if it would have been cool, Malcolm, you know.
It would have been Malcolm X.
Malcolm X. All right. Other popes who have known to have resigned, Pope Celestine V, a recluse who only reluctantly accepted his election in 1294. Celestine V resigned and fled the Vatican after just 3 months to wander in the mountains. Now, that sounds like a good thing for a pope to do. He fled and he wandered in the mountains and then realized that, you know, life was a little bit better back there in Pope Town, came back, and they said, no can do, baby, you gave it up. And he went, please, I want to go. And they said, no. Then, according to a history timeline on Christianity.com, the bishop who became the successor, Boniface the Eighth.
Now you know it's Boniface.
B-O-N-I-F-A-C-E.
Yeah, well,
it could be something different.
Well, great. You know, on this show, it's Boniface. Boniface the Eighth.
Yeah, it's dirty.
It ain't dirty. Let me tell you something, bud. Just because something has face in it doesn't make it dirty. What a jackass. Boniface VIII was intent on ensuring that Celestine V did not become an example for future popes and ordered Celestine V seized and imprisoned as he was about to sail to Greece. He died in custody at 1296 at the age of 81 and was declared a saint in 1313. Now dig that. They took this guy Celestine, who was wandering in the mountains, and they didn't want him to become an example to other popes to split and wander in the hills and commune with the goats, and so they arrested him, imprisoned him just before he was about to take off for Greece. And
was he going to wander in Greece too?
I don't know what he was going to do in Greece. But this guy Boniface, which now I'm beginning to think maybe it is obscene, grabbed him, threw him into irons, threw him into a jail cell. The guy's 81. He croaks. Next stop, sainthood.
Sounds good to me.
Exactly. Benedict IX, one of the youngest popes and for whom the breakfast was named, how about that, huh? Eggs Benedict. I'm kidding.
Phil, that's very blasphemous.
Oh, take it easy.
They really name an egg dish after him?
They named an egg dish.
No, they didn't name any egg dish after him. Benedict IX, one of the youngest popes, I was kidding, bud. Benedict IX, one of the youngest popes, he was elected at the age of 20.
Woo!
Get a load of that. They had a pope that was 20. In 1032, how irresponsible, and talk about the babes, and talk about the dope. Anyway, he became notorious for, there you go, licentious behavior, and for selling the papacy to his godfather, Gregory VI, in 1045, and then twice reclaiming the position. Gregory VI, considered a man of great reputation, Gregory VI had thought Benedict IX unworthy of the papacy and essentially bribed him to resign. He was recognized as Pope in Benedict's stead, but when Benedict's attempted marriage failed and he wanted to return to the papacy, a power struggle ensued. A council of bishops called upon Gregory VI to resign after less than 2 years in office because he had obtained the papacy through bribery. So you had this stepfather or godfather, whatever the hell, and the son, and they're bouncing the papacy back and forth.
What's papacy?
That's the Pope, the Popacy, the Pope, the...
Popedom.
Yes, the Popedom.
The Popedom.
Oh, okay.
Or whatever. So, yeah, it's if you're, it's the papacy, the Pope, the Popism, the thing that you are when you is. Now then, by contrast, the resignation of Benedict, whatever, Benedict XVI, after an eight-year tenure, will essentially be a retirement at the age of 85 after the Pope showed increasingly public signs of fatigue in recent months. His last day as Pope will be February 28th because they're making him work until the end of the month. He, you know, they basically said, you can't quit. No way, baby.
You're kidding.
I'm sort of kidding. I can imagine them, though, saying, what is that?
I wish to quit.
Yeah, he's probably all tired and wants to quit and they won't let him.
I wish to quit because I'm feeble.
No, 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 no can do, baby. You're sticking around to the 28th, okay? We got the deal on paper now. You're sticking around to the 28th. You leave now and the whole thing falls through. We're trying to redo the Venice canals.
Yeah, I don't think so, man. I think they're going to make them stay there for the 28th because they got to find a way to make a new guy.
They don't make a new guy. They're going to have to elect a new one.
Yeah, they're going to do a whole election. Do you guys know how that's done?
Uh-uh.
Well, they all get together.
Now, who's they?
They're bishops and stuff, the cardinals, the College of Cardinals get together, and then they, vote. And then they pump smoke through a chimney, and if it's dark smoke, they haven't reached a decision, and if it's white smoke, they have. Now, one of the things that we never have had in the history of the Popism, and I'm challenging them to have the guts, they've never, ever had... Dun, 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 dun. An American Pope. Am I right about that?
Yes, they have.
No, they haven't.
Think they have.
No, they haven't. The more you say yes, they have, now I'm convinced no, they haven't. They've never had an American Pope.
Why would they have an American Pope?
Why would they have an American Pope? Because America is where it's at. That's why. Because as the Catholic Church in America goes, so goes the whole shooting match, man. Because we've had a couple of saints around here. Because we've got some, you know, we got good Pope material over here. You know? Why? You don't think we could have a Pope from over here?
I don't know. I think you have to be Italian or...
No, you don't have to be Italian. And you don't have... They had a Polish Pope. This guy was a German. Time for an American. That's the way I got it figured out. All right, let's take a break. We'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Coming up is General Galen Shaw on the Pope and... I believe also Vernon Dozier, 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth
Phil Henry Show
is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. I'm going to get on the line now. General Galen Shaw is going to join us from San Diego, California. We also have Vernon Dozier from from Glendale, California. Both of these gentlemen will join us and talk about talk about Pope Benedict and his stepping down. General Shaw, how are you doing tonight?
Phil, I'm doing well.
And Mr. Dozier?
Yes, Phil.
All right. Let's talk to you first, General, about Pope Benedict and his stepping down from his position as head of the Catholic Church. What is the significance?
Well, I think the significance is that there will be a new pope, obviously, and that new pope could very well be an American.
An American?
Absolutely. And I'll tell you why. I think the American Catholic Church... is a segment of the Catholic Church that has shown itself to be very much, if you want to talk about a new schism in the Catholic Church, the new schism could very well begin with the American Catholics, because American Catholics are very separate from Rome, conduct their lives pretty much the way they want to, while they are close to and have respect for the Pope. American Catholics practice birth control. They practice abortion. American Catholics are very liberal. And Rome tends to hold to the old tradition. So I think putting an American as the head of the Roman Catholic Church in Rome would do a great deal toward drawing American Catholics back into the mainstream.
That's a very that's a way of thinking I hadn't heard much about. Do you think that that will do it? I mean,
well, you know, I think if you have an American as Pope, it naturally is going to pique the interest of and the devotion, I think, of American Catholics. And I don't think there's any question that there will be a unification, or at least a perceived unification of American Catholics with the Roman Catholic faith worldwide. So I think if they know what they're doing in Rome, they not only elect an American, but they elect one who's in his 40s, perhaps in his 50s. That is a pope that is going to be with us for a while and is not subject to the, obviously, the strains that Pope Benedict was subject to.
All right, we have Vernon Dozier with us. Coach Dozier, what do you think?
Well, it's an interesting point of view that was put forth by the general. I can't say that I'm thinking along those lines. I'm thinking along the lines as a coach, and I think that when I think about a pope or anyone in a position of leadership, I think of an individual that has a job to do. And I think, this he threw a little bit of a monkey wrench into what I wanted to say when Shaw here, General Shaw, I should say, excuse me, General.
Nora?
Said that he wanted an American. He threw a monkey wrench into my thinking. My thinking was that Pope Benedict has disappointed me, and I think has disappointed a great many Catholics around the world by resigning, because I see that as a failure.
Why?
Well, because he's giving up in a great many ways. He's giving up and showing that he doesn't have the stick-to-itiveness, I think, that you need. Now, when I heard Buck, you know, the general here say, you know, let's get an American in there, it threw a monkey wrench in.
This is General Shaw, Dozier, or Mr. Dozier.
Call me Coach Dozier if you want. I prefer not to be called by my last name.
Prefer not to be called Dozier?
Yes, sir. I prefer not to be called what you just called me.
Well, all right. I'm sorry. I didn't call you.
Let's just call him Coach Dozier. Is that all right?
Coach Dozier's fine. Mr. Dozier's fine. Vernon Dozier's fine.
All right. I'm used to referring to people by their last name because of my role as a superior in the United States military. I hope you'll forgive me if I falter or if I make the mistake of calling you by your last name, but I'm usually I'm used to referring to people and treating people as subordinates.
Right. Well, okay. I don't like it. I'm telling you, I don't. You're going to do what you're going to do. I don't like it.
All right. Well, we will endeavor to give each other respect.
That's all. That's all I can ask for.
Absolutely, Phil. Good point.
Okay.
Coach Dozier, my point is this: that Pope Benedict is resigning. There's no question about it. I would like to see an American. I think an American pope would help draw Americans to the Catholic Church in Rome. It would help unify the Catholic Church from the standpoint of American Catholics. I think that Pope Benedict may have disappointed you by resigning, but I think this is the answer of a prayer that I have prayed every day of my life since he became pope, that somehow, some way, he would no longer be pope. And I did not pray for anything bad to happen to him. I didn't want anything to happen to him that would hurt his health. But I wished and prayed and hoped and did a great many of the things that Catholics do, Phil, in doing penance and so forth, to get him out of there, to rid the Catholic faith of this egregious step, to restore the papacy to legitimacy.
Let me ask you, if I can jump in here, General.
Go right ahead.
What do you mean you prayed to get him out of there? Here is a guy that quit and, in so doing, disgraced everyone that ever supported him.
What I'm saying is he was a terrible pope. He never should have been pope. And I prayed every day of my life that something would happen that would not be tragic, that would not be hurtful, that would get him out of there.
Well, now, I want to ask a question here. There's only one way for a pope to leave office other than quit, and that is if he's to die. What were you hoping would happen?
I didn't want anything bad to happen to him. I didn't want him to die.
Mr. Henry's asked a very good question. How do you think he's going to get out of here?
I believe he could be removed. He could be removed. I had hoped that they would find something in his past that would smack of some
improper or even criminal activity with a child, a small child.
Then you wanted him to be a molester.
You want to find out. In other words, you wanted him to be exposed as a molester, and you think that's something that is hurtful.
Well, it's not a physical malady.
So you'd even want this to become a scandal and a black mark on his reputation so long as he was out of office.
I'm not saying dummy it up, and I'm not saying run him out on the down on the rail. I'm not saying any kind of a canker. I was hoping they'd find something. I was hoping they'd find something because I can't stand him. I don't like him personally, and I didn't like him as a pope. I can't stand this guy. All right.
Well, hey, Phil, can I say something?
Go ahead.
I don't know what your problem is, you know.
I don't have a problem, sir. I don't like this pope, and thank God Almighty he's quit. This is the answer to a prayer.
All right, well, hold on for a minute. Because for me, this pope shows, let me say something directly to Pope Benedict the 16th, sir, if you are listening, which I highly doubt, but if you are listening, and even if you're not, if there's anyone who knows you, any member of your family, who's listening right now, anyone who can get a message to him, would you please say, Vernon Dozier of Glendale, California, again, Vernon Dozier of Glendale, California has this to say to you, Pope Benedict. You didn't have the guts. You're a crawling, tail-dragging, yellow cur, and you didn't have the guts.
Okay, is that it?
That's it for now, yeah.
Well, you know, I don't know what to say to that. He didn't have the guts. I think he had guts plenty because he did what I wanted him to do, which was to get out of office as quickly as possible. And by God, a miracle has happened, Phil. You don't believe in miracles? You don't believe in the miracle of St. Anna? You don't believe in Our Lady of Lourdes? You don't believe in Our Lady of Guadalupe? You don't believe in the raising of Lazarus from the dead? I believe in all of it. And I believe tonight a miracle has happened. Pope Benedict has resigned. He's leaving the papacy. I thank Jesus Christ and the saints. I'm so happy.
All right, General Galen Shaw is with us, who is celebrating Pope Benedict leaving the papacy, and Vernon Dozier, who's very disappointed. We'll be back with more Phil Henry Show.
I don't know how you can say that.
Back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. On the line with me is Galen Shaw as well as Vernon Dozier, and we're talking with both of these gentlemen about Pope Benedict resigning. He's the Pope, and he's resigned. General Galen Shaw has been on the line here with us for quite some time, as well as Vernon Dozier, but both of you guys are coming at this from a very different point of view. In your case, General Shaw, you are saying that what we have here essentially is you're happy, and in your case, Vernon, you're saying that you're very upset that he did not have the guts to hang in.
And I think it's my turn, isn't it?
I don't know if it's your turn. I had a couple of things I wanted to say.
Go ahead.
No, hold on. It's my turn. I listened to him. It's my turn.
All right. I mean, I didn't know whose turn it was.
No, it's my turn.
It's not your turn. He's letting you talk, but it's not your turn.
He's letting me talk, and it makes...
You know what? I'm just going to hang up on both of you.
Well, that's a real puss way to...
That is pretty puss.
Well, that may be puss, but that's what I'm going to do. So, General Shaw, you go.
It was my turn.
And he said for me to go, and...
Okay, guys, General Shaw, go.
Oh, God. Thank you very much, Phil. I'm General Galen Shaw. My opinion is as follows.
Not to give a speech.
Now, just let him say what he wants to say.
My opinion is as follows. I celebrate today, and I celebrate today as fervently as I possibly can, because I feel that as a man who was in an American uniform at the end of World War II, as I was, a man who played poker in a cellar in Aachen, Germany, during the final push. We had gone across the Siegfried Line. It was January of 1945. And I was playing poker, and as a young GI, I took pity on a German POW that we had captured, and I said, "Hey, you, do you want to play cards?" I spoke a little German, and I said to this German POW, I said, you say what you can, Bill, in that situation. You dare come and see here, you know, and play the poker, something like that.
That's a load.
Excuse me, what is that?
Nothing.
Don't tell me it's a load.
Come and see here, play the poker. How do you know that that German didn't think you wanted to molest him or something?
Oh, man, you've got a pair on you, don't you? I didn't say anything of the sort.
All right, just tell the story. So you're playing poker with a German POW in a cellar in Aachen.
In a cellar in Aachen, and guess who he was? His name was Benedict.
Are you trying to tell me you played poker with this guy?
I played poker with him, and he is a cheating scumbag, and he... You know, you don't have to believe anything I'm saying. I understand. You don't have to believe a word I'm saying. But I'm telling you, he's a cheating, lying scumbag. He took me for quite a bit of money, about $100, and I never forgot it.
Are you trying to tell me that the reason why you want the Pope out of there is because this is the same German POW that took you for $100 in a poker game?
Yes, that's what I'm trying to tell you. Took me for $100 in a poker game.
He didn't say, he corrected himself. He meant to say poker. And I would just concur, Mr. Henry. I think this man is a mental case.
Mr. Henry didn't say I'm a mental case.
I will tell you this. This has got to be verified, and I don't think he was even a German soldier, so...
He wasn't? Yes, he was. I think he was. If he was, this is the guy. And I have prayed that this guy will find a way to get out of being a pope. Either he quits, or someone with some influence says to him, "You're a cheating, lying scumbag."
All right, I want to bring some sanity to this discussion, Mr. Henry.
Whatever that story is you just told, General, is so far-fetched. But if it's true, it still wouldn't mean that the guy doesn't deserve to be Pope.
Oh, is that right?
That's right.
He cheats a man at cards for $100, and he's a POW from the Wehrmacht. No, you don't know what you're doing.
Well, I want to bring some sanity to this discussion, Mr. Henry.
Go ahead.
I don't know whether this guy was a POW that took General Shaw for $100 in a poker game. If he did, I can tell you that he's won a little bit of my respect. But for the most part, he'd already had my respect. As a member of the Catholic faith, I saw this man become Pope. He took the job. I knew he was old. He was old when he took the job. So he made a commitment to the Catholics of the world. I'm old, I can barely move, I can barely breathe, but sure, okay, I'll take the job. Aha, right there. Because when you sign on and you take the job and you say, "Yes, I will," then, brother, you have a commitment to see through. You have a commitment to do the job, do the do, and all that. And this guy, he quit. He didn't have the guts. And he didn't have the intestinal fortitude and the wherewithal and the stick-to-itiveness to stay in the job and get the job done. Even Hitler stayed in the bunker to the bitter end. You want to talk about Germans? So what you want to talk about, huh?
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a lying, scum-sucking...
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll give you this much. He may not be a lying scum, but I'll tell you one thing. He ain't got the guts. Because even his Führer stayed in the bunker to the bitter end, and this guy bailing out, just like all the rest of them, just like they all did. They all left him. Now this guy's leaving him, too.
Left him?
Well, figuratively speaking. I mean, I feel like he is leaving him. I feel like he's leaving the Führer. I know that Hitler's not the leader of Germany, and I do know, no, I don't agree with what he did, so relax there. I'm just saying Hitler's the only one left.
What are you talking about?
Oh, boy, what are you talking about?
Look, you guys, don't start giving yourselves a victory parade. Oh, wow, Vernon's crazy. I'm not saying Hitler is good. I'm not saying that. I hate him. I think he's the lowest. But everybody deserted the Führer, and so is this Pope.
What do you mean he's deserting the Fuhrer? The Fuhrer hasn't been in there for years. Didn't you just get done saying the guy cheated you at cards?
Will you guys get into the present day, for God's sake?
Sorry.
I'm sorry, Mr. Henry.
Yeah. Who cares who cheated who at cards? So you're glad he's gone and you aren't. And, well, both of you guys can, you know, you can sit back and discuss that. He didn't have the guts, or he did, and so on and so forth, but he is gone, Pope Benedict the 16th. And to say that he doesn't have the guts to stay in there...
Well, I mean, the guy, he was already old, you know.
No, he was old. He took on a job that no one else would take. He took on the job for as long as he could, and then he finally said, I can't stand it any longer. I can't stand it. I can't stand you people. I hate this job. Take it and stick it.
Oh, is that what he said?
That's what he said.
If you sign up for a job, my friend, and you don't have the guts to stick around for that job, man, I just don't want to know you.
Well, you know something? You won't have to know me. And
I don't mean you. I mean...
All right, so the guy is gone. And future generations can argue as to whether this man had the guts or whether he was too old or whether, in point of fact, it's a good thing he left because he cheated General Galen Shaw once at cards in a cellar in Aachen. Thank you very much, General Shaw. Thank you, Vernon Dozier, for your attendance here this evening in this fascinating discussion of whatever the hell this has been.
Well, what do you mean, whatever the hell this has been? This is a discussion of the Pope resigning, and you've got a man with a resentment from World War II. You have another man that has some macho game that he wants to prove, or a macho game that he's playing.
Well, look, it's a Pope that is resigning, and it's a first in a long... No one really cares. I don't. The most sensical thing... The most sensical? Yeah, sure, I'll use that word. The most sensical thing that was said tonight was if they want to get a new Pope in there that's going to excite people, get an American in there.
They're not going to put an American in as Pope.
Yeah, there's no Americans old enough. You got to be old to be the Pope.
So you don't think they got old American?
What?
You don't think they got an old American?
Well...
What do you mean old? You mean old as a country?
Well, yeah, I meant old as a country.
Why? Why does you got to have a pope from a country that's old?
I don't know. Well, I guess I meant...
He means a guy, but he's...
Look, the point is that they could make an American a pope, but they're not going to do it. However, that would go a long way toward... Yeah, it would go a long way toward making a bunch of American Catholics feel like they're part of the whole thing. But the fact is, this is a lot of Catholic talk, and that's where that's at. That was weird when I heard that he'd resigned, though. But there's a first time, or a second, or third, or fourth time for everything. Thank you again, General Shaw, and thank you again, Vernon Dozier, for joining us here on this segment of the show. And by the way, the next time we have Vernon on the program, I need a note from his doctor, okay?
What?
What do you mean, why? The guy almost had another stroke there.
Oh, my God. He almost went out Friday night.
You better believe he almost went out Friday night. Friday night, I thought he was going to have an aneurysm for sure.
Yeah.
I don't want that guy on this show anymore unless he's got a note from his doctor. D-O-C-T, however you spell it.
D-O-K.
D-O-C-T-O-R. All right, don't forget at the Phil Hendry Show website, philhendryshow.com, with a Backstage Pass, you can become a member of our Backstage Pass family and get live streaming video of our show every night, and that's exactly what we're showing right now, as well as our video archive, as well as our audio archive, as well as our daily podcast of the show, as well as all of the archives of the show that go back over 10 years, 5,000 hours, and much, 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 much more. The Milwaukee Lion archives available to you as well. In this day and age, ladies and gentlemen, where sports talk is reigning supreme, yes, the Phil Hendry Show website already a step ahead of the rest with the Milwaukee Lion broadcast. All right, we'll be right back with more here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com on this Monday night.
Truth is
so
our bitch.
You don't think that,
the Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. On the line with me is Harvey Wireman, and we have a new feature with Harvey that is called This Day in Show History with Lawrence Ross. Now, Harvey, you know Larry Ross. is a longtime listener of ours. Larry is visually impaired, but that doesn't keep him from having an almost ironclad, just like a computer-like lock on the shows that we've done, correct?
Yeah, I've talked to Larry Ross. I know him very well. He's a guy with a very interesting mind. He has a photographic memory, and he remembers. And I would say this to you, Larry, you know, he and I had drinks the other night, and I gave him a hard time. I said, look, you know, with a mind like yours, you could put it to use in brilliant ways, and what are you doing? You are keeping track of this guy's radio shows. And Larry said, you know, I get laughs out of it. It gives me a laugh. What do you want? And I spit up a little bit, but I said, well, I remember I kind of went into a napkin. And
all right, you don't have to give us the gross play-by-play.
Well, don't be upset.
Well, you're insulting me.
Oh.
Why are you wasting your time keeping track?
Oh, yeah, come on, Phil. You know, I was giving him a hard time, but I said, well, why don't... Actually, he said, why don't we... No, I said, do you want a drink? And he said, I do. I said, do you want a drink? And then he said, yes, I do. And then I said something else. And then he said, why don't I suggest to Phil you read this day in show history that I wrote on the show, because I think you'd do a good job. And I, at that, I was having a problem spitting up. I said, I did a little bit of a. And
why?
Because the evening was going that way. I don't know. You're going to get me
All right. You know, never mind. Don't tell me how you spit up after everything that was said in the evening. The fact is that Larry asked you to read his This Day in History.
Yes, Larry said to me after I said, do you want a drink? And he said, yes. And I said something else. And he said, why don't you read This Day in History? And I spit up or something. And hold on for a minute, Phil, because I got the same problem here. I'm in the mall. I'm with my daughter, Dorothy, and my granddaughter, Courtney, and Jim's here. And they're over at the Pottery Barn. What? I'm talking to Phil Henry on his radio show. No, I don't want my glasses. I don't want my glasses, honey. I don't want my glasses. I don't want my glasses.
What? Do you have your other glasses?
I don't have any glasses. I'd rather go blind. I'd rather go blind than look one more time through the goofy kaleidoscope glasses that she keeps bringing. I don't want them, honey. Dorothy, I don't care. They're not my reading glasses. She keeps your daughter. I know she's my granddaughter, but she's your daughter. All right, Phil. They're at the Pottery Barn. They're getting something. I don't know what it is.
Who is?
My granddaughter and her husband, and my granddaughter and her husband, my son-in-law.
Your daughter and your son-in-law?
Yes, my daughter and my son-in-law, and my granddaughter is driving. She's not driving. My daughter's driving. And they're picking up...
What are they getting?
Well, if they're at the Pottery Barn, three guesses.
Pottery?
Yes, that's what they're getting, pottery. But they're getting a specific kind of pottery. They're getting something for the... it's something you put a plant in.
They're getting pottery.
Do you put plants in that?
Yeah.
Well, don't you? I don't know, Phil. I'm not, I don't have my interior decorator license.
Well, I mean, you put plants into pots. You put plants into... You put a lot of stuff into pots.
Yeah, I'll bet you do. So,
what is your problem tonight, man? Because you got to go out to the Pottery Barn with these people?
Look at me, Phil. My daughter and her son visit but once a year, and they bring my granddaughter, which I enjoy immensely, okay? But I don't need you and them dragging me all over.
Are they taking you all over town? They had you where? At the Whole Foods?
They had me at the Whole Foods. They got me this. I would rather be having a steak and a Doers over at Ted's, but I guess that isn't in my future. All right. This Day in Show History by Larry Ross. I'm Harvey Wireman. Today in the show, his story, 2000. Steva Basel is swing metal flower. Mackin, Tay, Barbie doll. All right, so Steva Basel is sewing Mate, Macca, Barbaba, Barbie doll.
Mattel, Steve Bozell is suing Mattel.
Wait, hold on, for a minute, Magic Man. How do you know? Are you reading what I'm reading?
No, I'm... Well, and as a matter of fact, I am, because I've got the website.
What website?
It's on Facebook. So we ought to, you know, Larry, what we ought to do, man, is post that on our home site, on our website.
Well, then why don't you do that?
Well, I think I will. I just started thinking about it now, because Larry posted on Facebook.
What an ass. Too bad.
You're the guy that's giving me the attitude here, man. So, it's Steve Bozell.
What? Why are you having to repeat it?
Because it's the same old story with you. Steva baba zaba, baba baba baba, and all that crap.
What? What a retard.
That's how you read it.
Well, do you want me to read this or not?
If Larry wants you to, go ahead.
Yeah, he does. So if you don't mind. The Barbie doll, so hot, and giving him a hard-on.
Oh, God.
What?
Okay, so the Barbie doll is giving him a you-know-what.
The Barbie doll is giving him a you-know-what? Hold on for a minute. What? I'm reading on the Phil Henry Show, what? I'm talking about a Barbie doll. I'm talking to you. I'm talking to Phil Henry's audience. Well, you know something, Jim? If you're PW, you go on back into the Pottery Barn and carry her groceries for her, okay? I'm talking to men. You understand what I'm saying, Jim? I'm on the radio right now with Phil Henry and his listeners. These are men. These are real men. You go back in the Pottery Barn and carry her groceries. Atta boy. Go on. Get out of here. It's my son-in-law.
Boy, do you talk to him like he's garbage.
Well, he's out there.
Oh, can you get me some money?
You know, he said, oh, and I said, you know something, Jim? I'm out here with real men. And I was paying you a compliment when I said that. And,
thank you.
You're welcome. And I said, you go inside and you put your genitals back into Dorothy's purse and continue pushing her shopping cart. All right. Okay. Now, where are we at? Here we go. In 2002, Margaret Gray wants to be able to carry a 9mm into the... Oh, boy, here's a biggie. Olympics. What's that? What's Olympics?
Olympics.
She wants to be able. What's that?
Able.
Able.
Well, if you're going to mock me, there's no point in doing this.
Well, if you're going to mock me, there's no point.
You know something, Phil? I try to come on your program. Hold on for a minute. Hey, Jim. I'm talking to men over here, okay? What do you want? Yeah, you go off and you do mommy's shopping for her. Phil?
All right, I got to take a break. Harvey Wireman, thank you very much. This Day in Show History from Larry Ross is read by Harvey Wireman. We'll be right back. Phil Henry Show.
Hey, Jim. Hey, Jim, what am I? I'm you. The dress? That's you. Hey, Jim. Jim.
Phil Henry.
Phil Henry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. And truth is our bitch on this thing. Nice to be with you tonight. Had a rehearsal of the one-man show earlier.
And how did that go?
Went very, very well. Very, very well. It's going to be very exciting. It's going to be a whole... I can't describe it. It'll be a cacophony of Hendriness is what it'll be.
Well, that's either good or bad.
Yeah, thank you, Bud. Well, you know what? A cacophony of Bud Dickmanness would be good or bad. Any of us, it might be good or bad. But it'll be what we do best, and it'll be what we do best, and a lot of it. And so that has been the main focus. And we had a lot of fun though Mondays are a bitch. I mean, let's face it, you know.
Well, Mondays are a bitch, Phil, because you're hitting the tequila. Now,
wait, hold on for just a minute.
Well, I mean, you're going to deny it?
Yes, I'm going to deny it. Mondays are a bitch because I'm hitting the... No, it's not. No, it's not true. I'll tell you what, Mondays are weird for me because the weekend represents a period of indolence and lethargy. It represents a a winding down of the physical fang, you know? You know what I'm saying?
No, I don't.
In other words, I'm slowing everything down and then kind of pumping it back up to speed because, no, I'm not drinking a lot of tequila. Why? Speak for yourself. You know?
I don't drink that swill. Thank you very much. I have my sherry. I have my Chardonnay.
You drink boxed wine.
You are an imbecile. That's why I'm going to let that pass, because I'm really just too tired to have to reach over the table and put one of your eyes out with this right here.
We see that, Margaret. 3 carats. Great.
3? Boy, are you an idiot. That's 4.
4 carats. 4 carats.
Yes.
That's 4. That's about a $30,000 stone.
No more.
35?
Around 35, 40.
In any event, please don't threaten to put his eye out with that, all right?
Well, then tell it to shut up.
Bud.
I don't drink tequila, and I'm not spending the weekend doing whatever you imagine.
Well, neither am I.
Well, you've got the bottle sitting here in the studio, Phil. You've got a bottle of Añejo here in the studio.
I'll tell you what, I had 1 glass of tequila over the weekend. I had a glass of tequila over the weekend, and I had that glass of tequila at the beautiful Langham Hotel in Pasadena. I got to tell you something. The Langham Hotel in Pasadena used to be the Ritz-Carlton in Pasadena, and it used to be before that. It might have been something else before that. I don't know, but it was the Huntington Sheraton. You remember the Huntington Sheraton?
Of course. Very old, grand hotel in Pasadena.
Exactly. Beautiful old hotel. It was built by Henry Huntington, the railroad magnate. Who,
What do you mean, a magnet? Like a magnet?
No, not like a magnet. M-A-G-N-A-T-E. A railroad, a big shot.
Not like a magnet, man. Like a, you know.
But he's not a magnet.
No, he wasn't a magnet. He was M-A-G-N-A-T-E.
Well, what's the other one?
M-A-G-N-E-T. Don't look confused, will you, bud? Just accept that there's one is a magnet and the other is a magnate, if you want to call it that. Henry Huntington, the great railroad guy, who, you know, there are a lot of people that came out here to California as they came to every part of this great country, no matter where, from the northeast to the southeast to the northwest, great people, you know, these big, big people that had big dreams, big visions, big money, big...
Penises.
Why, you dirty...
Ow! I was making a joke!
I don't care! Not that kind of a joke!
Do you see what I mean? How much more of this do I have to put up with?
Margaret, I'm dealing with it. There's a time and a place, bud. This ain't the time or the place.
Sorry, you're going to hit me.
That's right, I'm going to hit you. Big penises. Anyway, so they had big dreams, and one of them was Henry Huntington, the great multi-millionaire who built the railroads, and they named the Huntington Hotel after him, the Huntington Gardens, another place. But anyway, I went to the hotel there. It's now run by the Langham people. I got to tell you something. Have you ever heard of the Langham hotels?
No.
I had never heard of them. Man, I'm super impressed. It was even nicer, and I say this with the greatest of respect to the Ritz-Carlton organization, even nicer than the Ritz. Even, I think, way better. I just think it was a better, they did more inventive things with the restaurants, with the lounges, with the whole hotel had a far... I don't know. I like I say, it just was a far more inventive feel to the place. Really had a great time. But I went in and everybody criticized me. They were saying, hey, Henry, you know, what is it with you and the tequila, man? Are you ever going to take a shot? Are you ever going to roll a dice? You know, what is it with you and Don Julio? Okay. That's fine. So I had something called Ocho. And... No thank you, man.
Well, you know, you're prejudiced, man, against all out of tequila.
No, I just know what I like. Do you understand? I just know what I like. I know what I like, man. I'm not a big Reposado fan or any of that age stuff. I like a nice, good Blanco. That's just the kind of guy that I am, okay? So I had this silver. They had this Ocho silver. I didn't like it at all. It was lousy.
Well, what you said there's... What is the tequila? Frank was asking me because he's thinking of drinking tequila now.
I thought Frank was a Scotch guy.
He is, but...
Well, mine is Don Julio.
What's the other one, though?
Well, the other one is Cabo Wabo, and Patron is not a bad silver. And, I can't really think of any others. I wouldn't recommend any others, to be honest with you.
You wouldn't recommend anything other than those tequilas?
I would not. No, I would not. No, I would not. And I'll tell you something else. I'm going to keep on saying this until people understand. I don't give a damn about... Packaging doesn't mean it's a good tequila. Do you understand if it comes in a really expensive package? It doesn't mean anything. These people pick the Tres Generaciones. That stuff is swill, as far as I'm concerned. I don't give a damn if they put it in a box and it costs $300 or whatever. It ain't no good, man. I'll tell you one other thing. By the way, thank you to whoever it was that sent me a bottle of 1942 Don Julio. That was the sweetest and most generous gift. I can't even begin to tell. I don't even know who sent this. I am forever in your debt. And it Don Julio Añejo is a fantastic tequila. It's fantastic. And I'm going to bring the bottle down here tomorrow so that the videocast people can see it. But I have to just tell you something. 1942 Don Julio Añejo does not mean it was made in 1942. It's not a 1942 reserve. It was simply 1942 is the year that the Don Julio distillery was started in Mexico. So it's a celebration of that year. Got nothing to do with the age of the tequila. The other thing is they put it in that really impressive bottle in an impressive wooden box, and they charge you $120 for it. The tequila itself you can get for $60, but they charge you double for the 1942 because of the packaging.
Wait a minute. The 1942 was not made in 1942.
No, it was not made in 1942. It's simply called 1942 Añejo because I've said this many times, and I want to say that because I don't want anybody wasting their money. Now, it's not that it's a waste of money to buy Don Julio Añejo. It is a waste of money to buy it for $120. You don't have to, and I'm a little disappointed in the Don Julio people, which is now owned by Seagram's, I understand, or whoever the hell owns it. And I don't care. That doesn't hang me up. I could give a damn, you know, as long as they keep the quality good. But I'm a little disappointed in that asinine bit of marketing because, it was unnecessary, and it sort of takes advantage of very, very loyal customers. And I don't – why? Why would you do that? Okay, do you understand? Thank you, and good night.
So a split has developed between Phil Hendry and the Don Julio people. All right. Duly noted.
No, a split hasn't developed.
Yeah, you're saying stuff about him.
Uh-huh. What about it?
Well, you're just saying you're kind of criticizing it.
That's right. I will criticize it. That's, and I'll continue to criticize it. Here's an interesting headline. SEAL who shot bin Laden speaks out. The U.S. Navy SEAL, what time is it? All right, tell you what, let's take a break and we'll get into the story. This looks like a very interesting story. The U.S. Navy SEAL who shot Osama bin Laden is speaking out for the first time since the May 1st, 2011 raid. We'll find out what he has to say. I don't think it's good. When we come back, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Wait, what happened? Right, welcome back here. SEAL who shot bin Laden speaks out. A U.S. Navy SEAL. So here it is. We were starting to give you this story. And it is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And welcome back. The U.S. Navy SEAL, who shot and killed Osama bin Laden is speaking out for the first time since the May 1st, 2011 raid on the al-Qaeda leader's compound in Abbottabad, Pakistan. In an interview with Esquire, the former SEAL, identified as the shooter due to what the magazine described as safety reasons, said he's been largely abandoned by the U.S. government since leaving the military last fall. He told Esquire he decided to speak out to both correct the record of the bin Laden mission and to put a spotlight on how some of the U.S. military's highly trained and accomplished soldiers are treated by the government once they return to civilian life. Despite killing the world's most wanted terrorist, he said he was not given a pension, health care, or protection for himself or his family. SEAL Command told me they could get me a job driving a beer truck in Milwaukee, he told Esquire. Plus, he said, my health care for me and my family stopped. I asked if there was some transition from my TRICARE to Blue Cross Blue Shield. They said, no, you're out of the service, your coverage is over, thanks for your 16 years, go F yourself. All right, now that's the SEAL's version. Turns out, the problem is that he left military well before the 20-year requirement for retirement benefits. 16 years, he left after 16, you need 20. Now, I know that there's probably a lot of people saying, well, he shot Osama bin Laden, shouldn't a special thing be done for him? I guess that's up to the military and maybe to the president, you know, in terms of, well, he's a soldier, and he did his job as a soldier, and according to the magazine, the government provides 180 days of transitional health care benefits, but the shooter was ineligible because he did not agree to remain on active duty in a support role or become a reservist. Instead, the magazine noted, he'll have to wait at least 8 months to have his disability claims adjusted. The SEAL also gave his account. So there's that. He has to wait 8 months to have his disability claims adjusted. He left 16 years when you need 20 years. The SEAL also gave his account of the historic raid, including the moment he pulled the trigger and shot bin Laden. In that second, I shot him 2 times in the forehead, he told Esquire. Bap, bap. The second time is he's going down. He crumpled onto the floor in front of the bed. He was dead. I watched him take his last breaths, and I remember as I watched him breathe out the last part of air, I thought, is this the best thing I've ever done or the worst thing I've ever done? I'm not religious, but I always felt I was put on the earth to do something specific. After that mission, I knew what it was. He also recalled watching CNN's coverage of the first anniversary of bin Laden's death. They were saying, so now we're taking viewer emails. Do you remember where you were when you found out bin Laden was dead? And I was thinking, of course I remember. I was in the bedroom looking down at his body.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Exactly. In September 2012, fellow SEAL Team 6 member Matt Bissonnette published a controversial book, No Easy Day, under a pen name about the raid, drawing the ire of both his fellow SEALs and the Pentagon. A spokesman for Esquire told Yahoo News the magazine did not pay the SEAL for the interview.
Well, so what is he saying?
Oh, he's bitching about the fact that he left the service early. And as such, he didn't get his insurance. Now, I don't know why he left early. Something tells me that he might have thought he had better employment opportunities because of the notoriety associated with the raid to kill bin Laden. I know some of these guys consulted with one of the video game makers on creating some kind of a video game around SEAL Team 6. Some of them got into trouble for that or were criticized for perhaps providing some kind of classified information. I don't know whether any of this stuff is true or not. To be honest with you, I don't know whether we get the real story. This guy talking to Esquire magazine and supposedly it looks like he was bitching. I who knows if he was really bitching or whether he was just sort of complaining as a part of the normal complaining that goes on, or was he really having a serious problem with the government? I mean, these guys are really proficient, highly trained soldiers, and really committed soldiers. It seems really weird to me that they're going to start to bitch about not getting their insurance after they leave the service voluntarily short of the 20 years you need to get, you know, to maintain your coverage, unless they think that after killing bin Laden, they're superstars and they don't have to do the stuff all the other guys do.
Well, I think that there are a lot of ways they are.
Yeah, why don't they give them special stuff?
Well, I don't know, man. I don't know whether that's a smart thing to do. If you're a soldier and you say, okay, this is what I do.
Well, he's a member of SEAL Team 6. That is one of the most prestigious. Do you understand what you're saying?
Margaret, why do they get... This is not the movies, you know? We're not talking about baseball, where the superstars get paid $50 million a year. These guys are soldiers, and that's the job. Now, I'm not saying that you treat them like they're just garbage. But if this is a guy that gets to break the rules or somehow gets to make the rules as he goes along, and the Army or the Navy or whoever the hell says, no, it's got to go this way, and he says, ah, that's crap, you know, I want it that way, and they say, well, guess what, that's just not the way it goes. And what are you supposed to say?
He killed bin Laden, Phil. I think that deserves of some kind of special treatment.
Maybe it does. Maybe it does. But he ain't the guy to make the decision. He's not the guy that makes the decision, you know. The people higher up the food chain, as they say, make that decision. Anyway, I don't know if that's really what he's saying. It's hard for me to know what the truth is when we're talking about, you know, a magazine interview. Maybe he's just bitching, and he's totally fine with waiting, what is it, the 8 months that he has to wait to have things adjusted. And he says that the Navy said go drive a beer truck. I mean, it sounds to me like maybe the guy's got some case of he's like I say, he's a superstar, and he wants to start making a few dollars off of his major achievement. I don't know, like he wants to be Audie Murphy or something.
Who's that? Audie Murphy's he was a soldier, right?
Audie Murphy was a guy in World War II who won a lot of awards, and he was a big hero. And then when he came out of the service, they made him into a movie actor. Because he'd gotten a lot of notoriety in the newspapers, and he won a Congressional Medal of Honor, all this stuff. They decided to turn him into a movie star, and they did.
He was about what, 5'2"?
I don't know how tall he was. What do you mean 5'2"? What guy was that? The Army?
Well, I don't know. He looked like a little tiny man.
I don't know how tall Audie Murphy was, but he was a movie actor. And was in all kinds of movies. He was in Westerns. He was in war movies. He was even in one war movie where he reenacted something that he did in the Army, which was to basically crawl on top of a tank, open the turret, and drop a hand grenade in, then close it very gently and just... and then open it up and take a... I'm just kidding. I don't know what he did.
See, he opened it up, took a look inside to see if dinner was done.
That's very funny.
Ma'am.
What did he do? He put the grenade in?
I'm just kidding. Yeah, he went up on top of a tank and threw a grenade in.
And then he closed the lid and waited for it to go pop?
No, I don't know what he did. I was making a joke. But I imagine that's what happened. He went and he threw it. Who knows,
You're making a joke about him. Puts the grenade in...
Margaret, I'm just kidding. I don't know what he did. He went up on the tank, he threw a grenade in there. I don't know what happened.
Probably closed the lid and went boop. Yeah, he closed the lid and goes poof.
No, it didn't go poof. Obviously, it went bang and something that wasn't good happened inside that tank. Anyway, that's what he did, and then they put him in the movies. All right, so there's that. Heat says Lil Wayne not booted from the arena. This has been a controversy of some note. Lil Wayne was at the Miami Heat-LA Laker game. Was he kicked out? Was he not? Lil Wayne claimed he got the heave-ho from the Miami arena. The Miami Heat say that's not the case. The rap star wrote on Twitter he'd been kicked out of Sunday's game at American Airlines Arena between the Heat and the LA Lakers for rooting for the Lakers. However, the Heat said Lil Wayne, who was not in his seat for the second half, was not ejected and chose to leave on his own. Lil Wayne wrote, so I'm at the Heat game, right, rooting for the Lakers because that's my team, and would you believe they got police to make me leave? Wow, Lil Wayne tweeted. Heat forward LeBron James has scored a game-high 32 points in his team's 107-97 win. Was asked after the game about Lil Wayne. I wasn't over there. I heard he said he was kicked out. I heard from our people who said he was not kicked out. There you go. That's fantastic.
Is that really news?
Probably not. I think it's news that Lil Wayne wanted to make. I think he probably... wanted people to think he got kicked out. Maybe he's not getting the kind of ink that he needs. Maybe he needs a little more. Is that him with Drake sitting there? I think it is. All right, so that's the story there from the basketball front. The Lakers suck, by the way. And, oh, God, do they suck. And do I care? No, I do not. In other sports news, Michael Vick took a significant pay cut to stay with the Philadelphia Eagles and compete for a starting job. The four-time Pro Bowl quarterback agreed Monday to a restructured three-year contract with the Eagles just two seasons after signing a $100 million extension that includes a $35 million guaranteed money clause. We'll be right back. World-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Welcome back here. Starting another week, man. Whew. I'll tell you what. We have got so much to do. I mean, we've got a Bobby Dooley podcast that's starting. I hope you can join us for that because that's definitely going to be one of the weirdest things that this planet has ever witnessed. The Bobby Dooley podcast.
Now, when is that starting?
Next week.
Next week.
next week, the Bobby Dooley podcast. Now, in conjunction with that, I think we may even get a video cast going. But we got that and the regular podcast. But the Bobby Dooley podcast, it's going to be a beautiful thing. However, let me just say this. These are things that are out there and that are promotional vehicles. And I want to see some money, huh? You know? Want to see that money? Because if we don't see that money, then we pull that stuff right off the rack from whence it came. Money. Okay.
Well, Phil, that is not exactly how you get people.
I don't care. What do you mean? How I get people what?
How you get advertisers.
Well, we get the downloads. Don't worry about it, man. I got 500,000 downloads on the Phil Henry podcast as it is. 500,000 downloads on the regular Phil Henry podcast, and we're increasing every month, okay? The Bobby Dooley is going to come out of the gate even faster than that. Even faster than the regular Phil Henry podcast, okay? So we're doing our job. But if we don't start seeing some real serious dough, well, you know, we have a subscription site, and our subscribers are the only people that come to the table with the cold hard cash. Bang! Every single month. For as long as I can remember, we've had loyal customers. We deliver by way of the archives. We deliver by way of our video cast, our daily podcast, everything. We've got a very large archive of material, and people come over and take a part in it. And I'll be a son of a you-know-what if I'm going to start giving that stuff away. So, you know, we do certain things promotionally, and if I don't start seeing some of that commercial money happen, then we go back to this, you know, then we pull it all back because I'm not going to sacrifice my subscribers for, you know, some maybe could be, should be. So the Bobby Dooley, as soon as we put that, excuse me for saying this, Bobby, as soon as we put that bitch on the street, she better start making some money.
Wow! Oh, my God.
I'm kidding.
No, you're not kidding.
Yes, I'm kidding.
Well, when Dooley hears that, man, she's going to be upset.
Oh, come on, Bobby, I'm joking around.
As soon as you put that bitch on the street.
Look at Margaret, you know. That's the way the world works. All right, a woman charged with killing her lover broke down in tears on Monday as she described for jurors how her relationship with the victim included satisfying his deviant sexual urges and how he once beat her, kicked her in the ribs, and broke her finger. Jody Arias, age 32, has spent 4 days on the witness stand recounting her troubled childhood marred by abuse at the hands of her parents, a string of bad relationships, and how Travis Alexander belittled her, cheated on her, called her derogatory names, and used her to fulfill his sexual fantasies. Arias will return to the stand on Tuesday for a fifth day of testimony. She faces the death penalty if convicted of first-degree murder in Alexander's 2008 killing. Prosecutors claim she killed Alexander in a jealous rage, stabbing and slashing him 27 times, slitting his throat, and shooting him in the head. Arias says it was self-defense after initially telling authorities she wasn't there. She then blamed it on masked intruders. She now claims Alexander attacked her, forcing her to fight for her life. I always wonder if a woman tells the truth right out of the gate. Do you think that's...
No, it won't help. You might as well lie, because telling the truth right out of the gate is not going to help.
Well, that's a bad message to send, Margaret. You know...
I don't care. If you tell the police when they show up, I killed him because he was attacking me and because he was this and that, you've got these cops standing there, 9 times out of 10 they're men... They're not going to believe you. The investigating officer isn't going to believe you.
So you might as well lie, huh? Just like this lady did?
Well, what's the difference, Phil? You can lie and possibly get away with it. And then when they don't believe you, you can say, no, he attacked me. What do you think?
I think she may be telling the truth, but her credibility is undermined for me. But, I mean, she's still... I still, you know, I don't doubt that... you know, it's funny... when it comes to men and women, I heard the most and I still hear the most interesting stories from women about their encounters with men when there's no other man around. Do you ever hear this? So there's guys out there. Are you listening, guys? You just your wife or your girlfriend or just a girl or just friends? Do they ever tell you of the things that happen when it's just them and they have an encounter with a guy and there's no other men around? It's a very interesting. Reality that we are not privy to as men. I mean, I've had women tell me that guys regularly are flipping them off. Now, most guys are not going to flip other guys off without realizing there could be some consequences to that. Because not every man just shines that on. And guys know that. So you don't regularly flip off other guys, especially guys you don't know, because you don't know what's going to happen. But I heard from my wife and from girlfriends all the time, they get flipped off by a guy, flipped off by a guy. Guys hitting on them in the crudest possible manner as they're walking into a Starbucks or they're walking into a supermarket. Hey, like your ass. Boy, you got the nicest look, you know.
Oh, that happens, sure.
Okay, that happens, sure. But most guys don't, we don't know about this stuff, see? So the reason why I'm bringing this up is when a woman says that this, that, and something else happens, I tend to believe it more than not because there's a world of behavior occurring when, you know, when other men aren't around between lone women and lone men out there in the world, the way some guys will treat women, talk to them, follow them, chase them, follow them down the street. I had somebody tell me once she was followed for 3 blocks in broad daylight with all kinds of people around by some scumbag just because he wanted to, I don't know, either scare her or because he just thought it was funny, you know.
It happens all the time, Phil. So what is your point?
My point is that if this woman says that this stuff happened, I tend to believe rather than disbelieve. However, having said all of that, I also know that there are times when women are going to lie through their teeth about this kind of stuff. So, you know, you have to look at everything. You got to look at the statements that she makes, the condition of the guy's body, the statements of witnesses, other people that actually witnessed their relationship, this guy's, you know, own history, whether he has a police record or not. Has there been a history of abuse between them? Has he put, you know, a lot of guys are not going to hit a woman and have it be so serious that she shows up at a hospital. If a woman's a doormat, that's a bad thing. Does a guy deserve to be shot and slashed 27 times because he makes a woman a doormat? I don't know. I tend not to think so.
Well, it depends on what you mean by a doormat. Is he using her as a doormat? Or is he just treating her as a doormat?
Well, what's the difference?
Yeah, what's the difference?
What's the difference? If he's using her as a doormat, he's literally walking across her.
And he's wiping his feet off?
And he's wiping his feet off, yes.
So she's laying down?
She's laying down in front of the door. I know you're laughing. I know it sounds absurd. But if that is the case, if a woman is laying down in front of a door and the man is wiping his feet off on her.
Yeah, then I'd say that would be worth it. But if it's not...
It'd be... What do you mean, worth it?
I mean, then I would shoot him. But if he's just treating her bad.
When has a woman ever literally been used as a doormat?
I don't know, Phil.
I mean, lay down and the guy wipes his feet off on her. I don't even know if he's worthy of being shot 27 times and stabbed 27. Even if that's the case, you know. More like what you should do if a guy treats you that way is treat him like a doormat. Have him lay down and wipe your feet off on him. I don't know. But treating a woman emotionally like a doormat, she later explained how Alexander once beat her, pushed her to the ground, kicked her in the ribs. Now, see, that's the kind of behavior that over a period of time is going to get somebody so angry, then they are going to shoot you 27 times. She testified, though, that she never sought medical treatment because she was worried authorities would get involved and that Alexander instead made a split for her hand at his home. She said she was later ashamed of herself. Now, I have heard women tell the following story. They didn't want him to get into trouble. I've heard this. I didn't want him to get into trouble because of the children, because of our home, because of our family. I didn't want to bring the police involved, even though they knew that the guy was involved in a physical assault against them, maybe even a physical assault against the kids.
Are you kidding me?
I'm telling you right now. I'm telling you, and people out there know that I'm telling the truth, that women will be reluctant to report a husband even after he's assaulted them or one of the kids for fear of breaking up their home, breaking up the family, giving a bad impression of dad to the kids, and so on and so forth. I'm telling you, I don't give a damn what anybody... I've heard it, and I've seen it. She also described how she awoke from sleeping in his bed to find the victim having sex with her, an incident for which she felt responsible. I went to sleep next to him. I was wearing a T-shirt and cute shorts. So he was raping her in her sleep. Or maybe, is that rape?
Well, if you... I don't want to get into this. I think you're asking some questions now that are none of your business.
None of my... What do you mean none of my business?
I don't want to answer that.
Margaret, I'm not asking you. I'm talking about her.
You're talking about... You're asking me, though. It's none of your business, because you're asking me.
No, you're not... No, I'm not asking you.
No, you're not asking... I'm not asking you.
Margaret... I'm wondering, is it rape if a man has sex with a woman while she's sleeping, given the fact that they have a relationship where maybe it's happened before, maybe she said, yeah, that's cool, and so on and so forth?
Why are you... It's none of your business.
All right, then I won't ask you, okay?
Then quit asking.
Not asking you!
You're asking this woman.
I'm asking about this woman.
Again, it's none of your business.
Is it any of my business if I'm just asking her?
No.
Why not?
Because I represent her. Never mind.
You represent her because she isn't here.
Yeah, she's a woman. So, Margaret, you got to represent her?
Yes, I represent.
Oh, you represent? Yeah.
Okay, Phil. Don't get sarcastic.
No, it's fine. You represent. All right, so Margaret is representing here, and she says on behalf of this woman, I should stop asking questions now. Just move on to the next story.
Yes, you're getting personal and... You're sticking your nose up into her business, and I don't think she likes it.
All right, we'll be right back and see if we can find something that the next subject of our news story would find okay for me to ask, but I'll ask Margaret first. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Here, the world famous Phil Hendry Show. What, bud?
Damn, talk about I Don't Like a Monday.
I Don't Like Mondays was a song by the Boomtown Rats, and because we were talking about how much Mondays suck. Oh, God, they suck. The Boomtown Rats did that song, and that was based on that girl in San Diego who opened fire on a grade school. And those kids now are all, I want to say they're in their late 30s, maybe early 40s now, those little kids. Isn't that wild? Those little kids that were shot at in San Diego. It was a grammar school, and it was a girl that lived across the street, and she was living with some, I don't know, an abusive father. It was a bizarre, she's still in prison, by the way.
Yes, I don't know her name, but she has been in and out of trouble in prison. Lots of self-abuse, cutting herself, some very, very untoward lesbian relationships.
What has that got to do with anything?
Well, it's not that it's a lesbian relationship, but it's one of those scary lesbian relationships, you know, where they're, it's like, the one, what's her name? The Monster. Do you remember Monster?
Yeah.
It's like that.
Okay, so they're criminals.
Yes, Phil, don't give me the big bug-eyed, ooh, Margaret, you're so weird. You know, it's a prison lesbian relationship, the worst.
All right, so it's a prison lesbian relationship, I got it. Hey, what happened to our, we have a take overlay, excuse me, folks. All right, so it's a prison lesbian relationship, the worst. What was her name?
I forget. But she's in prison now, and she's been in and out of trouble. She was cutting herself with rape. She's a very strange woman.
Well, she's a murdering SOB, and she killed, individuals as well as severely injured others. And like I said, those kids are now, the children that were attacked on that day are now in their late 30s and early 40s and still suffer the trauma of that day. That Monday that woman opened fire, and she, at the time I say woman, she was a 15-year-old kid herself, and she told the police when they asked her, why did you do this? She said, I don't like Mondays.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. That was her famous quote, and the Boomtown Rats took that song, took that sentiment and turned it into a song of some note. So, that's that. AMC's hit Walking Dead set series ratings record. The zombies keep getting stronger. That's right, AMC's hit The Walking Dead set a series record on Sunday night with 12.3 million viewers. The show was returning from a hiatus, and the Nielsen Company said it beats the series' previous record of 10.9 million for its third season debut last October. More than half of Sunday's viewers, or 7.7 million, were in the youthful demographic of people ages 18 to 49. Nielsen says a cable series has never reached that big an audience in that age group. Get that, baby! So cable TV has now come of age, and we're seeing this more and more with more and more different kinds of shows. We're seeing the influence that cable is having with the great television that is created on cable TV. And I can only say thank God. And we're seeing a shift in, as I mentioned last week, a shift in radio listening habits with news talk is essentially dead, that sports radio is now getting all of the advertising money. I mean, I'm not saying anything that people don't know. And 40 million people are listening to podcasts, and the radio world, the radio landscape, is completely clueless. That's impressive numbers, by the way, for The Walking Dead by broadcast standards. While NCIS on CBS was the most popular drama on the air with 22 million viewers the previous week, fewer than 5 million of those were under the age of 50.
Oh, my God.
Can you believe 22 million, fewer than 5 million, were under the age of 50. So CBS, talk all you want about the resurgence of your network, and I don't doubt it for a minute. I mean, I think that you're doing much, much better than you have, and you've got some good comedy, but that's not a good number to have, man. You know, 22 million people and fewer than 5 million are under the age of 50. In the meantime, here you have Walking Dead, 12.3 million, and almost all of them are 18 to 49-year-olds. That is the key demo. That's the money demo, man. Now, I don't know. I'm sure they've got some very smart... One of the things that suits are good at, they're good at bullcrap. They're good at spinning the bullcrap. You take a guy like this guy, Dickey, that runs Cumulus, he wouldn't know his ass from a hole in the ground about anything. He doesn't know anybody or anything. He's the guy that said that Mike Huckabee was the answer to the Rush Limbaugh story, and as soon as that was proved to be wrong, he very rapidly changed his tune, probably blamed it on somebody, and moved on to, we've got to do things different in radio. They even asked him, and the guys that asked him the question, these reporters, when it comes to the radio, they even said, well, what did you mean about Huckabee? Yeah, that's good, but, you know, we got to do sports now, so now he's on to something else. This guy is as slimy as that guy Moonves. These suits, man, I swear to God, there's only one thing that they're good at, and that's holding on to their jobs. There's nothing else. They can't program. They don't know how to... They wouldn't know the names of the players. They don't know any trends. They don't know really what's happening at all in terms of the actual broadcast game. They don't even know what's really good radio, what's good television as opposed to bad. All they know is how to squeeze another year out of their contract and to make sure that somebody else is blamed for all their mistakes. And that guy's a great example, folks. He's a great example there of individuals that are running those broadcast networks. Then you take the cable networks and look at this. So it's a whole new day, and it's a whole new day. It's a whole new, I don't know, whatever you want. You know, just a whole new way. It's a whole new way. Exactly. A whole new day and a whole new way. All right. And let's hope that that's exactly what it is tomorrow night, because tonight, man, I just as soon flush right straight down the old crapper. What a night. Woo! The world-famous Phil Henry Show has been produced by our good friend, Mr. Dan Northcraft. And, of course, I am also involved in that. Don't forget, our website is philhenryshow.com. With a backstage pass, you get thousands and thousands of hours of marvelous audio at your fingertips, as well as years and years and years of podcasts. We got a new podcast tomorrow. It's episode 123. We got the Bobby Dooley podcast coming up. I mean, we will press on bigger, badder, and better than ever before. Stick around. And see if you make me out to be a liar. All right. For myself, Bud Dickman, Margaret Gray, and Robert Leonard, along with Dan Northcraft, we'll see you tonight at 10 o'clock, and let that be a lesson to you, ladies and gentlemen.
Hendry.